This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 30th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Merrim. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, we'll hear from Iowa State climatologist Elwin Taylor about La Nina and his plummeting U.S. corn crop prediction. The Renewable Fuels Association says reports that the U.S. will need to import ethanol just to keep up with the consumption as MTBE is phased out are vastly exaggerated. And the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee took the floor this morning to speak to the topic of immigration laws and the need for a guest worker permit. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Well, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt usually joins us. He won't be here today. Pete and his wife are in Egypt. They were there yesterday for the full eclipse of the sun. We wish them a safe return and look forward to hearing from him again next week. No worries, though. There'll be plenty to talk about today, as tomorrow the USDA will release the latest grain stocks report and the planting intentions report. We'll take those up during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. May wheat at 344.5, up 2.75. July futures up 2.75 as well, 357.25 the settlement price. Kansas City wheat today settled 4.25 cents higher at $4.10.75 a bushel. From the corn pit in Chicago, nearby May contract at 227.75, 3.5 higher. July 3.25 higher at 238.75. September futures at $2.48 They finished 3.5 cents higher. December futures at 260 even, up 3.25. May soybeans, 587.75, up 5.25. July contract up 5.75 at 601. And the August contract at 605.75, up 6.25. November contract 615.5, up 5.25 for the May bean meal now, 179.40, up 70 cents. May bean oil at 23.17. They were up 20 on the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, nearby March feeder cattle at 103.35. They were down 15 cents today. April live cattle, $81 even, up 37.5. And the lean hogs finished the April contract 62.5 cents higher at $58.12.5 a hundredweight.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker is away this afternoon. Fortunately for us, Dale Durkles is in the office to take his place. Good afternoon to you, Dale.
Good afternoon, Todd.
All right. We had a little rally today just before the grain stocks, and the reports are due out the morning for the planting intentions. What's your take on the marketplace?
Today I'd really line up the two things, and one of them was tripped by the other. A lot of the action, it looked like, in the grain pits really was short covering, and you know, the origination for that interest in getting out of short positions came through the outside markets. You know, we had gold up today somewhere in the vicinity of $9 to $10. We had silver that was up about 50 cents an ounce. We had crude oil and energy markets higher for the first time since last October. We had wholesale gasoline back over $2. So, you know, it's a lot of this outside markets and still in this whole phenomenon that's tied together on people's worries about inflation that I think really spawned some of this movement back out of the grain pits today.
Your expectations for tomorrow's reports?
Frankly, all along I've been saying that corn acres would be up something less than a million, and or down, excuse me, a little less than a million, and I had been thinking, you know, soybean acres would go up somewhere around 1.5 or something like that. So I'm probably just a little bit tighter than what the trade is on their expectations. But if we come up with numbers like that, I don't think the trade's really going to react very hard at all.
And is there anything that farmers are asking you on this day before the reports that they really want to know?
Yeah, should I sell some today or wait through to and see the numbers tomorrow? You know, I mean, those are the kind of things that you get when you're on the telephone with people. And, you know, that kind of goes, you know, your response in part is kind of dovetailed. You know, do you need to be making sales somewhere in the next 3 weeks for cash flow reasons? Are you still holding major amounts of inventory? Yet lots of other things, you know, that kind of biases which way you really respond to that.
Let's say they have a lot of inventory on hand, and they don't necessarily need to get rid of it. What's your answer to the question for corn and soybeans?
I tend to have more of a mixed answer in that regard. I will say this, if I'm really more concerned or more interested in selling things, I'm more interested in selling soybeans rather than selling corn, basically just acknowledging the fundamental structure for beans because of our crop, but also because we're harvesting a big crop in South America, looks like it's going to be more difficult to generate any sustained move on the upside, at least until we get into the summer growing season and have weather things that may or may not play into the market at some point. I'm not necessarily really bearish on beans, but I think the market is structured such that we may just end up drifting along here sideways. Versus corn, you got people in that market there that aren't necessarily looking at this year's fundamentals nor next year's, but are looking at 3, 4, 5 years down the pike, you know, and with the ethanol ingredient in play at this point, those don't look especially negative right now.
I made note, and we'll hear it a little bit later in the news, that there are some that believe we will import ethanol this year based on the phase out of MTB and that the plants in the United States won't be able to keep up. Have you read that one?
Yeah, I have, and I think that's really a possibility. You know, I mean, there's a real mixed opinion. You know, the renewable fuels people say that, you know, we're going to be a little tight, but we shouldn't be, quote-unquote, short of ethanol. But the Energy Department people and the analysts there go, you know, we could see some spot problems in this thing, and I think that's probably where we're going to be, is that we could run up against some spot problems and making it a bit easier to just go ahead and import the ethanol into some areas than trying to move the ethanol from really the bulk of it here in the Midwest to either coast.
You know, does that really have an impact, I suppose, after we get to the point at which imports have to come in, does it really have an impact much on the corn market when they're bringing ethanol in simply because the capacity's not there in the United States?
It's really not a bear to the corn market. It just means it's possibly a lost opportunity because we don't have the ethanol capacity here in the U.S. yet, you know. But, you know, with where we're at this point with an industry that's in a very fast ramp-up phase right now, you know, you look at the USDA expectations and the grind of corn for ethanol next year is going to be about 30% larger. 30% larger than it's going to be in the marketing year where we're in right now, you know, and that's a pretty fast ramp up itself. So, you know, until we get fully over that hurdle, you know, it may take some imports to get there. And then, you know, you get back into the price relationship between ethanol and gasoline itself. And, you know, how do the increasing emphasis on flex fuels, you know, really impact, you know, overall ethanol demand? There's a lot of unknowns out there in the long haul.
And finally on this, after our conversation on Commodity Week, did you go back and think much more about the outside markets and the longer-term influence? I know you've been mulling this over for the better part of a couple of years, I think. And we had a pretty good conversation during Commodity Week last week, but I wondered if you had taken a look more at that and any more thoughts to follow up.
No, other than I still think there's just this huge wall of money that can be headed to the commodity markets in general through these indexes and index products. And, you know, it's one thing that forever is going to create changes over the next couple of years that myself even, I don't have any easy answers to say what the impact's going to be other than I have this tendency to believe that generally it's going to have or cause markets to have a little bit more positive bias.
Yeah, and I guess I've heard people say and talk about this in terms of policy, and I bring this up. I know you're a market expert, but on the policy side, that there may be enough in the marketplace that we might not have to worry about the WTO and the phase out of some of the LDPs, direct payments, countercyclical payments that have come under fire on the world stage. And I suppose that's just kind of long-term look at the marketplace.
Well, there's really this move afoot, you know, because of the WTO regulations, and then you get into the quote-unquote different boxes where these payments are actually counted. And I think that's why you're finding a move afoot this year as people look at developing a new farm policy to one that's maybe going to move away from, oh, I don't know about LDPs necessarily, but certainly going to move away from those countercyclical payments and things like that over to more of an insurance-based product itself, which you can go ahead and structure and still not see it counted as subsidies and work against you in the realm of WTO.
Well, speaking of that, and maybe this is a good place to drop this in one end, I happen to be talking to Bob Thompson, who's the policy expert here at the University of Illinois, yesterday, reminding me that coming up April the 6th, at 3:30 in the afternoon here on campus on the College of ACES Library on the south end of campus, we'll have a Canadian expert on their farm revenue insurance programs, and he'll be talking about the experience that the Canadians have had over the last decade or so. They operate, I believe, on the farm insurance, revenue insurance side. So it might be interesting for those who are interested in policy to drop by. That's absolutely open and it's free. It's in the Monsanto Room, which is in the basement of the ACES Library. Tell me about livestock for the day and the trade there.
Boy, that's an enigma to everybody in the livestock trade itself. You know, and the one thing you go back to in the livestock market is the wholesale complex and the wholesale markets. Pork and beef both are just staying weak-kneed at this point. And I think part of it, it's number one, seasonal. There tends to be a negative sentimental attitude here while we're still in the Lenten season, you know, and we haven't quite gotten to this point where retailers are ready to reach out and start booking any needs for post-Easter and on for the spring barbecue season yet. But along with that, you still have this battle that's going on between the red meats and cheap chicken. You know, it's just a battle that just won't go away because in the wholesale markets, poultry is staying cheap right now, either whole birds or if you want to get into different parts of chickens, and it's creating a real competition. Adding a little bit to that, I think, is the mix that we really haven't just quite gotten to a point where we're seeing those seasonally declining hog numbers yet, too. So it's all just kind of adding up. I think we're probably coming to a head at least some point here pretty quickly on the declining markets we've been seeing in both cattle and hogs.
Dale, we appreciate you being with us today.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. And that is Dale Durkles joining us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Thursday afternoon, filling in for our normal Thursday afternoon analyst, Dan Zwicker. Both, of course, are with AgriVisor Services, and they are located in Bloomington, Illinois.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
A couple of notes before we get to the agricultural weather forecast in just a moment. A reminder to visit our website at willag.org. There, tomorrow morning, you will find all the numbers that are released from USDA, or several of them, on the grain stocks for the quarterly grain stocks report, along with the planting intentions report. Hopefully, Dave Dickey will have those in place sometime not too long after their 7:30 a.m. Central Time release. You can also subscribe to our weekend newsletter. I'll put that together tomorrow morning very quickly. Those come out on report days as well. That's the other time we put that newsletter out and deliver directly to you via your email account, the numbers that are released on report days, including tomorrow. We'll take care of that in the morning. And then don't forget that next week, on April the 4th, if you happen to be in the Walcott, Indiana area at the Tri-County High School, Dave Dickey will be there along with Wayne Nelson, Daryl Good, Mike Zuzlow, and Kurt Kimmel at 6:30 in the evening for another one of our AM 580 Outlook panels. That's sponsored by Midland Impact. That's that's April the 4th at 6:30. Wayne Nelson, Daryl Good, Mike Zuzlow, and Kurt Kimmel will be on hand along with Dave Dickey for another one of our Ag Outlook panels at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana. Taking a quick look at Ed Kieser's forecast for tonight now. In Illinois, he says it'll be mostly cloudy. There'll be a few thunderstorms. Some of those will be severe. In Indiana, increasing cloudiness. Thunderstorms arriving after midnight. The lows, Ed says, will range from 50 in northwestern Illinois and west central Illinois to 58 in the south. Tomorrow, he says it'll be windy in all sections. In northern Illinois, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers. And in central and southern Illinois, some lingering thunderstorms early, otherwise a mix of clouds, some sunshine, a few scattered showers there as well. In Indiana, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, some may become severe. Highs will range tomorrow from 55 in northwestern Illinois to 72 in the far south. In a moment, the Ag News. In today's agricultural news... Well, the odds of a summer drought in the Midwest are increasing, according to Iowa State University Extension climatologist Elwin Taylor. He says a La Nina appears to be forming just ahead of the planting season.
We call out that La Nina has begun when the atmospheric pressure associated with it, called the Southern Oscillation Index, reaches 0.8. And right now it's at 0.77. And it's been climbing directly toward 0.8. We think it'll be there before this week is out.
Taylor says a La Nina, should it develop, will impact crops in the Midwest this summer and beyond. He says he already predicted this year's corn yields to be lower than last year's. And now he says a La Nina may even mean lower corn yields than that.
We, of course, made one back in November that thought we would have a below trend line yield for corn. The trend is 146 bushels the acre for the nation, and we're expecting about 143. With La Nina now looming, we have to adjust that to 138.
But Taylor says a Midwestern drought won't start immediately. In fact, he says some Iowa ag producers may face conditions that are far too wet come planting time.
We anticipate that we may even be on the wet side of usual. Some locations, as we go into planting time, then the concern is, will it suddenly turn off and go dry? And that would be a very legitimate possibility.
Dr. Elwin Taylor is an Iowa State Extension climatologist. Well, from the weather and corn to corn and ethanol. According to the head of the U.S. Energy Information Administration, it's actually profitable for U.S. refiners to import ethanol from Brazil, despite a 2.5% tariff and a 54-cent per gallon duty. In fact, the administration says imported ethanol will likely outpace 2005 levels despite the tariff. The same agency believes the ethanol industry will have a tough time keeping up with demand in 2006, partly due to the phase-out of MTBE. But according to the Renewable Fuels Association, the EIA is making the wrong assumptions. Both sides had the chance to testify before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee Wednesday. The committee met to discuss gasoline and ethanol pricing. During the hearing, the president of the RFA explained the EIA's mistaken theories. First, the assumption, he says, that the pipeline capacity for MTBE gasoline will be completely cut off is incorrect. And secondly, he says, EIA is underestimating the U.S. ethanol industry's production capacity. He says the industry is already on track to handle demand. Elsewhere in Washington, while the immigration reform bill passed the House last year, it doesn't include a guest worker program. House Speaker Dennis Hastert of Illinois is signaling the House may be willing to compromise on that issue. Hastert says the first priority is protecting the border, but notes the House does recognize the need in some sectors of the economy for a guest worker provision. But before discounting anything, he says the House will want to see what the Senate comes up with. Speaking of the Senate, Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss was on the floor this morning making a speech regarding control of the borders and enforcing laws on hiring and immigration.
We can secure the border. And if this body acts in an appropriate way over the next several days, we can come up with an accommodation to those workers who are here for the right reason. And at the same time, we can ensure that those people who have crossed into our country illegally are sent back to wherever they came from, again, in the right way.
The right way, of course, means putting a legal process in place.
We must ensure that a legal process for hiring foreign workers is put in place and strictly adhered to. We can address this problem, and we will, by mandating employer sanctions for those who flaunt the rule of law and continue to hire illegal workers, and by providing tamper-proof documentation to those who are authorized to work in the United States so that employers will have no confusion about the legality of the workers they hire.
Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss from the floor of the Senate this morning. And finally today, the Vice President of the American Soybean Association, Gary Joachim, explained the importance of opening China's market to additional ag imports in the Doha round of the World Trade Organization talks to the Senate Finance Committee. According to Joachim, an analysis by the American Farm Bureau Federation shows China will account for 35% to 40% of world agricultural trade gains from a new global trade deal. And if China doesn't fully participate in the market access negotiations, Joachim says there likely won't be enough trade expansion to justify concessions the U.S. is now preparing to make on domestic support. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, just a quick reminder for those of you who use our website to listen to the programming content after it's aired here on WILL. If you happen to be away from the radio during the day and you'd like to pick up our programming content, you can right there at WILLAG.org. Some of you, I know, have been having a problem with the real audio files that they don't play. If you're on a high-speed internet connection, in particular those of you that are on DTN speed, you might simply click on the MP3 files. If you're on a high-speed internet connection, you won't have a problem playing those. They should open with the QuickTime Player. QuickTime Player, it's probably loaded on about 98% of the machines out there. It comes with almost every machine that has ever been sold. So if you're having problem with the real audio files, just click on those QuickTime files, the MP3 files, and they'll open and should play on the QuickTime Player.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Bill, I was taking a look at the numbers for the cash side of the marketplace, and it looks like corn's up over $2 at this point, 203.5, a little higher than that maybe, than according to the FarmDoc website, and those, of course, yesterday's number. The soybeans at 5.53, we're up a penny and a half from the 29th. What do you make of the cash grain market at this time?
Well, we've seen the bases improve a little bit on both corn and beans here over the last week. Really pretty aggressively on the corn side of it. We're seeing things back off just a little bit tonight. I think that's as much a risk management situation as anything, you know, take a little bit wider basis levels as we go into a pretty volatile report. But we did see the cash movement really start to pick up, especially on the bean side of things today. Just kind of started and built as we went through the day, similar to what the markets did, the prices did.
It's kind of interesting if you take a look at the recent history for the planting intentions report. It's not been very accurate over the last couple of years, off by a couple million acres, in fact, in each year for the corn, I suppose. They take about 80,000 surveys of farmers, but the farmers either don't trust the government or they simply don't know what they're going to put in the ground. How much stake should a producer put in the number that comes out tomorrow?
Well, I think that it's exactly what it says. It's a planting intentions. And the farmer doesn't necessarily know how his spring's going to go whenever he gives those numbers to the government the first part of March. So I guess I think that it's going to, it's going to be within a few million acres, if you call that accurate.
Well, when you're up at 80 million acres, a million here, 2 million there, might not be so terribly far.
The other part of it, I think, Todd, too, is that, you know, this time frame with the end of the quarter and the end of the month and the weather starting to show up here on the forecast for the planting, you know, everything kind of comes together here right about this period every year, so.
It'll be interesting to watch as they come out tomorrow morning. I know you'll be watching for them. What are your bids for the day?
On the cash corn, we have 206, fall 228, Cash beans 557 and fall 583.
Bill, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. He joined us from the elevator in that small burg north of Bloomington. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with ag meteorologist Ed Kieser about the weather. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Champaign's Liquor Advisory Commission is considering a proposal to give police more leeway to intervene at private parties that are causing public nuisances. It's one possible response to unofficial St. Patrick's Day festivities, which got out of hand on the U of I campus last month. Meanwhile, one of the principal promoters of the unofficial St. Patrick's Day event has lost his seat on the Liquor Advisory Commission. In a letter this week informing Scott Cochran of his removal, Champaign Mayor Jerry Schweihart wrote that his promotion of the campus event was inconsistent with being a responsible commission member. The grandmother of three children who drowned in Clinton Lake says she saw no signs they were mistreated by the man accused of killing them, and that she would have stepped in if he had been abusive. Ann Powers also told jurors in Bloomington today that Maurice Legrone Jr. was nearly inconsolable when she saw him at a hospital after the car he was driving sank in the lake. Prosecution witnesses had testified earlier that Legrone showed little emotion after the incident. The new jury deciding former Illinois Governor George Ryan's racketeering and fraud trial has sent another note out to the judge in the case this afternoon. No word yet on what they're requesting. Earlier today, jurors asked for transcripts of testimony from four witnesses, most of which involve a $1 million a year state contract with the company that made license plate stickers. Ryan's co-defendant, Larry Warner, is accused of trying to shake the company down for lobbying fees. An Illinois woman says she's thrilled that her daughter has been safely released after being held hostage in Iraq for nearly 3 months. Mary Beth Carroll of Evanston got word that her daughter, journalist Jill Carroll, was freed in Baghdad today. And help from fans was not enough to save the James Dean Gallery Museum in Gas City, Indiana. The museum opened in 2004 along I-69 near Dean's hometown of Fairmont. Owner David Lohr says he's placed most of his memorabilia in storage. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Pete Levitt is away today on vacation, actually, in Egypt with his wife, as he told us a couple of weeks ago. He was there yesterday for the full eclipse of the sun. Joining us now instead is our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Great to have you along with us, Ed. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here, and it was good to see some sun today. That's something we haven't seen a lot of late.
Tell me about the weather that we'll have over the next couple of days, please.
Well, we're going to have windy conditions through tomorrow. In fact, tomorrow winds will be sustained at 20 to 30 miles per hour with some gust, probably over 40 miles per hour. And we have a stormy weather pattern setting up. Some showers and thunderstorms have been dotting western Illinois already today, and they'll be pushing eastward across eastern Illinois and eventually Indiana tonight into tomorrow morning. And our best chance of severe weather will come in the wee hours of the morning for east central Illinois after midnight. Same thing for west central Indiana. So we're going to be having some strong storms likely moving through late tonight and some downpours with these thunderstorms. A lot of places will get over a half an inch of rain, some places getting over an inch of rain. And that'll be followed by more rain coming in Sunday into early Monday. And then it looks like another system comes in during the second half of next week. So a lot of recharge of soil moisture.
That sets us up for a pretty good planting season. But as I've talked to some of the other climatologists and meteorologists, they're looking out at things like La Nina, Bermuda High in the southwest, potentially building at that point. And I know you don't make a forecast long term, but what's your concerns, if any, about the weather this spring?
Well, at first, the fact that it's going to be wet, although it does look like there will probably be opportunities between the rains for planting. So that's the very first thing. Now, of course, a lot of people are starting to throw these buzzwords around, and the one that's bothering me more than any is La Nina. La Nina is cooler than average water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean near the equator. It usually isn't strong in the summertime, and even if it is going on, that's just one of many pieces of the puzzle that makes our weather. And I think to put all your eggs in that basket is being very risky.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think that we are in for some stormy weather overnight tonight, so just pay close attention to the weather. It looks like the main tornado threat is staying out west, but there is a tornado watch as close by as parts of Iowa and Missouri now.
And, of course, we always go down in power, and there are many outside of the county, Champaign County, that can't hear us on the air, but they can pick us up off of the website if they want to hear what the latest information on the weather might be in the overnight hours.
And for those in central Illinois, within probably about 60 miles of Monticello, can get us on FM 90.9 as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ed. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at the WILL radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason. That is today's edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning for our first look at the marketplace. Starts at 8:50 a.m. We'll take a complete look at that hour of the USDA reports. And don't forget to hit our website at WILLAG.org. Not too long after the 7:30 release of those numbers, we'll have them posted. We'll also send you an email if you happen to subscribe to our Ag newsletter. Have a good afternoon.